evening to you and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guests, heard on Voice of Barbados 92.9 FM. You can call us at 434-1790. You can send us a WhatsApp at 253-4679 or an email at cricketmason@yahoo.com. Mason and Guests is brought to you very much in terms of practice sessions we had. And in fact, they were very much involved in a practice game today with Craig Brathwaite getting 84, Campbell a duck, Brooks got 17. We saw good work from Hope. Of course, there's always Hope in Shea, 83. Ruston Chase got a start, didn't carry on. He got 37. Shane Durridge, little batsman in the middle, 6. We forgot 18. Warrican really didn't trouble the scores too much. He got 1. Then we had Harden, Knott, Philip Knott. And in fact, we come down to Holden Knott. And extras were 29, 275 all out in 79 overs. That's Craig Brathwaite's team. And in terms of the bowling of great interest, Roach, 14 overs, 3 maidens, 1 for 52. Gabriel, well, good to see him in the side. And there's speculation that you get into the, you never know, the final 11 when we look at the first test match. 13 overs, 4 maidens, 3 for 32. Joseph, very impressive, 16 overs, 5 maidens, 4 for 60. Maxween, the man from the Spice Isle, Grenada, 12 overs, 2 maidens, 1 for 42. Mears, 8 overs, 3 maidens, done for 16. And Cornwall, the big man from Antigua, 16 overs, 4 maidens, 1 for 54. Of interest, though, one says 199 for 3, and that batting letting Brathwaite side down, 275. The game continues tomorrow. And on Mason and Guests, of course, we're going to be going to England. In fact, we already have Philo Wallace on the line there. And we also want to touch base with Johnny Boran. I think he's on the line as well. And we're hoping to touch base with Van Bernholder, the big fast bowler, former fast bowler, a little bit later on. And of course, we want to touch base with Kenny Flipper Benjamin as well. And a little bit later on, we hope to talk to Dominic Warren, the commercial director, because many people have been asking. Of course, Dominic Warren, the commercial director at Cricket West Indies, many people have been asking about the whole question of coverage, and I would imagine that he would be in a position to tell us exactly what's happening. But without any further ado, let me go and say hello to my good friend, Philo Wallace. I see Johnny Boran is there as well. Hello, Philo. Your smile is as broad as Black Rock. Just trying to see if we get Philo on the line there. All right. Philo, you got to unmute your mic, please. We want to hear you.
Right, can you hear me now, Andrew?
Philo, what's going wrong with you, man?
Let me say good evening to you, your listeners, and good evening to my friend Sherilyn Hart, because he scolded me for not mentioning his name last week. So yes. I need to give his good books, because he's a hard-ass master.
Mm-hmm. And of course, your good friend Johnny Moran is on the line. Johnny, how are you? You're looking very pensive there. Hello, how are you, my friend? We got to hear you, Johnny. We got to hear you, Johnny. Where are you? Johnny, you got to unmute that mic, please.
Here we are.
Oh, what's going wrong with you, gentlemen? You miss Barbados. You miss the gap so much. I think Russell Arnold is on the line as well. Russell, how are you, my friend? Is he there, Russell? Russell?
Yeah, I'm here. How are you guys? Good evening.
Good evening to you. So, Russell Arnold, first of all, Russell, where are you? Are you in Sri Lanka?
I'm in Sydney at the moment. So, it's the morning of the 24th. You woke me up early.
All right. Now talk to me, Russell, before we go to Philo and to Johnny. What are you doing in Sydney, Australia?
Well, Sydney's home. Sydney's been home for 12 years now.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Travel around for watching the cricket and, that type of lifestyle. But the family's been here. And I must say, they've handled the situation very well out here. Kids are back at school. Life's rolling. And, we feel safe. So, compared to the news coming out of the rest of the world, Sydney's a good place to be in under this present circumstance.
How have you coped with COVID, though? I mean, it's been a pretty rough time.
It certainly has, but the freedom's been there. We're doing whatever we need to, of course, work opportunities from my point of view. at the moment I need to travel. There are a few restrictions there, but in terms of life otherwise, kids are back at school, sports activities up and running. We can move around, do whatever we need to. Gyms are open, so life is actually kind of back to normal. Rugby is back, crowds are allowed in, so things are quietly moving forward out here.
All right. Well, that's good, good. So we're going to certainly continue our discussion on West Indies cricket and, of course, getting ready for that battle. Fellow, give me an assessment of the first day's play. Brathwaite's 11, 275, but at one stage they were 199 for three. Talk to me about the day's play, Fellow.
Obviously, it was a good run up for Craig Brathwaite's 11, and Drew disappointed in the end. To have lost those flurry of wickets, six wickets for very little runs. Then obviously John Campbell and Shamar Brooks did not really cash in and get big totals. But for Craig Brathwaite and Shea Hope, expected a game. These are two guys who won a test match for us at Headingley 3 years ago, and a lot is expected of these two experienced batsmen, you have to call them. So it's good to see Craig among the runs, Shea again among the runs. They're spending time at the crease. And obviously, for Ross to just get in 30, or expect, obviously he didn't carry on, but still he would get a feel of conditions in England. So it's good that they actually got out and the batsmen really got an opportunity to bat. Those who didn't obviously cash in will have a second dig. But to me, 275, not bad at all, Andrew, after being practicing among themselves for a couple of weeks. So 275 is good, but just losing those quick wickets at the end would have really, you know, shift the balance. But a good run out today for the boys.
Johnny, your assessment?
Yeah, I mean, I think a pretty impressive day, certainly from a Craig Brathwaite and Shai Hope point of view. You know, it's the first professional, technically the first professional game we've seen since the Pakistan Super League back in March. And it's fantastic to see cricket is the only cricket played that has been played in the UK for a long, long period of time. And impressed as well with Shohan Gabriel, about 3 for 32. I've just got a feeling I think, as you mentioned at the top of the show, that he might well ease his way, not only into the squad, but into that starting 11. Of course, the West Indies have a four-day first-class game coming up before the first test as well, but a really tidy run out today.
Mm-hmm. Russell, have you been paying any interest in that game?
Well, that's the only game we have to pay any attention. So, kind of, yes. Yeah, it's good to see the boys out there. Especially Craig Brathwaite, Shea Hope getting runs. But looking at the bigger picture, yes, we know they're just coming out after a long time. But from a West Indies point of view, that's kind of the story, hasn't it? Everyone getting starts, a lot of 50s, 60s. So, you know, come the test series, I think that's an area they really need to look at. Shea Hope, the last time he got 100 was in Headingley. His 200s. We're back there, but since then he's been pretty consistent. But for West Indies to really compete, I reckon those got to be a lot bigger, and from Brathwaite as well, considering Brad and Bravo, they're all not in the middle order.
Mm-hmm. Russell, when you look at this upcoming series, you think England will win, or you think the West Indies may pip them? Is that a fair question?
Well, it is, but I think West Indies do have a fair crack. Because you look at the series they played against each other in the recent past, they have competed, they have won test matches. Now you have to remember that England summer is just starting. They haven't played either. Mm-hmm. So it's a great time to catch them on the hop. So if you are sharp now with the camp and this type of setup, I think Phil Simmons can get the boys into a good groove. I reckon there's a great chance to knock England over, because England also, of late, they've been working with a bigger squad. Now, that has its positives, but it's kind of not settled the game. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if West Indies can get ahead here.
Mm. Johnny, your reaction?
Yeah, I think the West Indies have a fantastic chance. Of course, they've won 3 out of the last 5 games across the last 6 test matches. Home and away, and I think that, you know, they come to England with a serious attack, and that I think, you know, they'll match them pound for pound, I think, with the ball. But the big question is whether they can score enough runs across the course of the test series to trouble England. That'll be the big question. But I think bowling wise, I think it's a really impressive outfit, I have to say. And I think they'll perform as well as, if not better, than they did back on the last tour, certainly the last couple of games.
Mm-hmm. Philo, your reaction to all of this?
Well, Andrew, the two gentlemen are correct. When you look at it, I think West Indies are going to compete. I think I honestly believe they're going to beat England. Mm. Because
that's a big Andrew,
Shannon today bowling 13 overs, 32 runs, taking a 3 wickets. It's another plus. All I'm seeing is good things happening. When you look at it, Bradford get their runs, Hope get their runs good. You know that Roston is there. Their boats, Dalridge will come good. There's no doubt about it. But the bowling obviously is coming together now that Shannon obviously has come true. But I think that when you look at it, in order to win test matches, you're going to take 20 wickets. Yes, you're going to score enough runs. But sometimes you're going to have low scores and still win because you take 20 wickets. So the key to me is that we have enough bowlers to take 20 England wickets. I think the batsmen the batsmen know that they have to get runs. They know it. England bats very, very deep. But our bowlers need to obviously know that they have to work a little harder for their wickets. And when you look at it, I think the West Indies being in that camp, and they've played a bit of first class cricket before, obviously it was disrupted by or stopped with COVID-19. And some of these cricketers are not out of form. Mm. Some of them are still in cricket form. England have to restart. They've just put their squads together and they now have to restart. Jofra Archer is not joining them straight away because there's some illness in his family.
Mm-hmm.
So that is that's a negative again. But I'm seeing a lot of positives coming out of this camp here for West Indies. And I just hope that the guys can take the confidence that they gain in this camp down to Hampshire and play 5 solid days of test match cricket. And I believe they can get on top of England. They need to win the first test match because mm-hmm. the next two back-to-back at Old Trafford, you never know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been joined by Dr. Andrew Ford, co-host. Dr. Ford, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing fine, and good night to the gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
Good night, Doc. Everybody's doing well.
Yes. Any questions for your good friend Arnold, who's been living in Sydney for 12 years and didn't tell anyone?
Well, he's in a good place for COVID-19.
Yes.
That's a very, very good choice. How do you guys feel about the practice match among squads and people who know one another? How much can we really mm-hmm. take from this? You know, that everyone, it's a friendly squad, and yes, it won't be the intensity of playing an unknown team, even, you know, no matter what the strength of the team. So how much can we really mm-hmm. gather from this exercise that we witnessed today?
Mm. Johnny, you want to go first?
Well, I mean, interestingly, I would say there is a precedent for this. Australia, in the last Ashes tour over here last summer, they had a squad of around 25 players for a practice match between themselves at the Aegeus Bowl, which was really hard fought and led to the test squad being picked, if you like, off the back of that practice game. And some players came from absolutely nowhere to get into that side. Labuschagne being a prime example, somebody who forced his way after runs at Morgan and then doing well in that game. And I really feel that actually those inter-squad games, because you look at something like Shannon Gabriel, who's busting a gut to get into that main squad and get into that side, I think, you know, they are going at each other hammer and tongs here, because there's a number of players who've got a point to prove. I think it's an excellent exercise before the next game.
Russell?
But the Aussies came with a side that wasn't really named as well as ours is named. There's only one spot for a bowler that's left to be fought for. But I wouldn't diminish what happened out in the middle. I think it's good that they've got to play some cricket. As you say, no cricket being played anywhere, so it's a good outing. I understand the captain didn't bowl much because of a little niggle today.
Mm.
Is that something we should be worried about?
Philo?
It's scary. They said that apparently during the first week of being here, he twisted his ankle. Mm-hmm. And I hope he's not playing football. He twisted his ankle. And obviously, it's still sore. We know how injuries are in England. Because it's not that hot, injuries take longer to heal. So I believe that Jason and the medical team are taking a lot of precautions because he's a key. He's the number one all around in the world in test match cricket. So obviously he's vital and he's a captain. So they're trying to protect him as much as possible. But it gives the other bowlers the opportunities to bowl and give him a chance to captain the team, because he hasn't really captained a side for a very long time. So give him an opportunity just to captain rather than thinking about captaining and bowling, getting the field places right and stuff like that. Another thing, I might sound a little critical, but I don't like playing red ball cricket in colour clothing.
Oh.
I didn't like that when I saw the photos. You know what I mean? If you play, and you had two quality umpires, you know, and they're playing the mono style, but they're playing in colour clothing. Unless they're trying to keep their white clothing at a special. But I think something white should have been there. I know.
They don't want to show the kit.
Oh, right, okay.
I see.
But I felt like a miss out swing a true colour, looking at a red ball coming out of a black set, a dark blue set, background as a bowler.
Russell, is there any merit in what Philo is saying?
Yeah. Well, you're trying to replicate the closest possible scenario. You're coming out of isolation. You just want to get out there. So I think this exercise is positive to what Johnny also did say. But then again, spending time out there, bowlers running in, just come feel, getting them close to it. And I'm with Philo. They probably should have done everything closest to
it also supports Doc's point. How serious is this 3-day game if you're playing in those color clothing? Maybe a little white. I'm not being too picky, but we're playing among ourselves. Unless it's new kid and I don't want anyone to say it until the 8th of July,
it is true that the intensity, the friendliness, there's nothing on the line. You know, those type of factors do play a part, but you're trying to be as serious as possible to try and get the most out of it.
Russell, let's look at the construct, the possible construct of the West Indies team, though. I know, Philo, last week you were saying you would play the four fast bowlers, and of course, have Rust and Chase, and you were suggesting that Cornwall could be the man. In fact, you reckon he's going to be the big man for the West Indies. Russell, it's going to be a challenge, in my view, in relation to the final construct, because if you play the four fast bowlers along with Chase and possibly Cornwall, you may very well find yourself a batsman short. What would your construction look like, Russell?
Well, I guess the four fast bowlers will come down to how the pitch is at the last minute, but you cannot forget that's West Indies' strength.
Right, fine.
You have, and with your strength, to try and hit the opposition hard and get into a position to win a test match. As Philo mentioned, you want the 20 wickets.
Right.
Is Cornwall and Roston Chase a top-class spinner? Well, that's a different question. If they get into that situation of the fourth innings, yes, they can win you a test match as Chase showed you once before, picking up those 8 wickets. But you have to plan over the 5 days. 4 fast bowlers is the way I'll go. Unless, of course, with Cornwall in there, he's been saying that he wants to work on his batting and contribute. If he can do that, I think that's the best balance that the West Indies will have.
So you're suggesting then, Arnold, that you play the 4 fast bowlers along with Cornwall and Roston Chase as well?
No, Roston Chase is your batsman.
Yeah, okay.
Bowls a bit.
Okay, fair enough.
So you're looking at him as a spinner or a bowler.
Right.
He's your bonus.
Right.
Just like a holder.
So Arnold, can I write your possible 11 down then? I've got my pen here. I've got a piece of paper. Can I possibly start to write then as your possible 11? Philo, can you do the same? And we're going to come to England, of course, as well. Here you go, Arnold. Got my pen at the top.
All right. At the top, you have Brathwaite.
Brathwaite, mm-hmm.
You can't go with Philo, can you?
No,
not anymore.
Campbell?
I've gone.
Campbell? Yeah. Brathwaite and Campbell?
The only two openers on tour.
Yeah.
Okay. Hoping at 3.
Hope at 3.
Isn't Chase at 5?
Okay, so Chase at 5.
Get the 11 in for you.
Okay, fair enough.
You have to choose between Brooks and Bonner.
Mm-hmm.
I think you chose the other batsman already.
Mm. Russell, I've got Brathwaite, I've got Campbell, Hope, Chase so far. I imagine that Brooks will make your side. Shamar, you got your doubts about?
Yeah.
Okay, Brooksy, all right. So we're down to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Your keeper is Dorridge.
You got Doug.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that's 6.
Then you have Holder at 7.
Holder at 7.
You got Cornwall.
Cornwall is in there as well. Mm-hmm.
And then you have
your top boy.
I get Joseph. I'll go Gil.
And Joseph.
And Joseph.
All right. Okay. Do you agree with that 11, fellow?
Well, my 11 and changing, Andrew.
Okay.
I'm going to go for Craig at the top with Campbell.
Because you had Shamar holding your side last week.
But I'm not changing it.
Fair enough.
If Shannon pips him, Shannon will pip in on experience. But I think that young man has something to offer.
Right.
You see, I'm looking for wolves that hunt in pairs. And here, Al-Zahri Joseph.
Yes.
They're a good team. I saw them live a couple of years ago in Trinidad under Tony Gray's guidance. And they were brilliant. And we need to try and bring them through together. I know Shannon looks good. They said he's bowling quickly. But this is what selectors want. Selectors want headaches with selections.
Mm.
So it's just going to be interesting the more to see how Shamar goes with the ball as well.
Mm.
Because if he gets wickets tomorrow... Yes, please?
Yeah, you know, the coach and all the coaches are talking about Shannon. They're not really talking about Shamar.
Yes,
I know.
Interesting, but it's something. You have a guy who makes the original 14, and, you know, I understand Shannon being the experienced one, but he's coming off of an injury, but yet no one talks about him. So I believe that from a psychological confidence point of view, I think that he may feel a bit diminished compared to Shannon. But I think the coaches, even when they speak of Shannon, they should always try to be inclusive of the group, the five-man pace group, and try not to lean too much. But I guess it will come down to is he fit enough and should he play or not. But it will be interesting to see, won't it?
Mm.
It will be interesting to see. But it obviously I like Shamar Hall. I think that he's new. He brings that other dimension that West Indies is lacking. And I think that when you look at him, you know, for his last season, he was very, very consistent. And he's in form. He feels good. He has the confidence to really run in and bowl. And if you get him bowling well and Al-Zahri bowling well, you have two very good young fast bowlers who can be trailblazers for the West Indies moving forward. Mm. You see, we in the Caribbean, we want youth to play, but when we have someone that is excited, we want to keep them back.
Mm.
I think that we can, I think that, this is me, if Shamar Holder comes through these two practice games the way I think he will, he should play in Hampshire. Unfortunately, one of the senior bowlers will have to miss out, but that young man is ready.
Oh, he's ready.
Australia brought a man named Manus Lambershire, and nobody don't know to get him out. Lambershang, he scored Nafrans. Unusual. So we need to sometimes honor, we need to let him go and enjoy himself. He might shock England.
Yes.
I think he has the ability to do it.
Mm. Johnny, your reaction to all this?
I agree with Philo. I mean, these are really positive headaches for West Indies to have. In the fact you're trying to juggle a potential 12 or 13 into 11 that play on the day, and the fact that you've got these headaches with Gabriel trying to force his way into that 11. I think these are fantastic problems to have, and I think that this narrative will continue through the course of the next few days and through the 4-day first class game.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's turn our attention to England. We've spoken a lot about the West Indies. John, you got any ideas to the construct of that side?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I mean, I've got 14 names here
14
to get
names.
Into 11 places.
Oh, dear.
Now, I'll go through them quickly,
sure.
And I'll tell you where the problems start. You've got Zach Crawley, Rory Byrne. Rory Byrne's missed a large portion of the last tour with an ankle injury, picked up due to football. Zach Crawley came in and did really well. Joe Denley currently has a place. Obviously, Joe Root, Josh Butler, Ben Stokes. then one of either Leach or Bess. Leach missed a large portion of the last tour. He was ill as well. Don Bess came and did quite well. Jofra Archer, of course, currently isn't with the squad because of a slight COVID scare, but I'm sure he'll join up. Sam Curran, then you've got Jimmy Anderson, Mark Wood, Stuart Broad, and Dominic Sibley as well, of course, who did brilliantly in South Africa on the last tour. So there's some real permutations as who plays at the top of the order. Either there'll be two from Zach Crawley, Rory Burns, and Dominic Sibley. I'd expect that Zach Crawley could well play off potentially against Joe Denley for a spot in that top order. But the really interesting one comes in, you know, what is the bowling permutation here? Because Jimmy Anderson missed the last couple of test matches in South Africa. Mark Wood came in and did absolutely fantastically, and everybody will remember his performance, of course, in St. Lucia last year. Stuart Broad as well. So you could find somebody like Jimmy Anderson potentially not making the 11. I think it's highly unlikely.
Say that again.
Well, you could find that Jimmy Anderson has to still force his way back into the side.
Ooh.
Because, of course, he missed the last couple of tests.
Mm.
And that's if they... It often comes down to whether they want to keep Sam Curran for the balance in the lower order. But lots of permutations for England to wrestle with.
Mm. Just before Russell comes in to react to that, I'm sure he's got our good friend Mr. Anderson as his number one pick. I think Kyle Mayers is joined us as well. Kyle, how are you? Is he with us? Okay, yeah. Hi, Kyle.
Hi.
Okay, good.
I'm okay.
All right, good. So, it's nice to see you. Is that a beard you're wearing there? You didn't have that when you were in Barbados.
Yeah, I did. I did, actually. I was wearing this for a few years, though. It took me a while to actually get a beard.
Is it this way you're scoring so many runs?
I really think so. Since I had a beard, I've been batting well.
I like that. Well, you're in a good company. You've got Russell Arnold. I'm sure you know him. And Philo Wallace, who doesn't have a beard. In fact, doesn't have any hair at all. And, of course, we've also got Johnny Baran as well. Just before we go to you, Russell, how have things gone for you so far, Kyle?
You mean in England?
Yes.
Things have been great. I mean, it's an opportunity for me to be with a test team and to learn as much as possible. My first time being in England as well. Despite the COVID restrictions, not able to go anywhere and stuff, I think is very good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very good. And you're not homesick, are you?
No, not yet. It's only been at least like 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Probably another 2 weeks I might start thinking about home.
Mm. How did it go today in terms of the practice match?
I thought it was a good day. Mm-hmm. Batters played well. Mm-hmm. Bowlers did well also. Very balanced. It was a good pitch and a lovely day outside. One of the better days so far down here. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen the sun like that at all since I reached.
Mm-hmm. So have you been coping with the weather well so far?
Yeah, at the beginning it was tough. Mm-hmm. Obviously, never been to England before in the cold conditions. Taking the cool breeze in the lungs and what's not. But now I'm climatizing as well.
And of course, you're looking to make a big statement, get some runs, and possibly get into that first test.
I'm looking to make a big statement every time I go on the pitch. The test squad probably is selected by now.
Mm.
Maybe if there's an opportunity presented, I'll be able to take it if I go there tomorrow and perform.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Well, and it will make a lot of difference. I'm sure you to wear that maroon cap, you must be really looking forward to that, Kyle.
Yeah, I have been through the honor 15s, the honor 19s, the A's, the B, so just this last step, so I'm really looking forward.
Mm-hmm, indeed. Let's go to Russell now. Russell, it seems as if as far as our good friend Johnny Baran is concerned, he may have a headache in picking the England side.
I think he's right.
Mm.
It's a good headache.
Mm-hmm.
Because since last summer, if you looked at the team that went to South Africa, lots of different names.
Mm.
And the series they played before. So England do have quite a bit of depth to go on. And they have lots of options to balance a team. They can go in any direction that they wish. So it's for England not to be too cocky, because you really have to respect your opponents. You have to make sure that you get your best team out there and not think that anyone going out there is going to do the job for you. Mm-hmm. So they really have a lot to think about, which I think is exciting for England.
No, but in terms of Jamie Adamson, I mean, when you look at someone like Anderson, I think you'll have him on your side, wouldn't you, Russell?
Yeah, if it's fit, I certainly will, because he's a leading fast bowler. That's the only format he plays.
Mm.
And how much longer will he play? So from his point of view, getting him out there and playing him, getting the most of him for the moment is the best way possible, and build the rest of the bowlers around you.
Mm.
But of late, he's not been very fit. And as I said, England have had the resources to juggle around and rest players. But at this stage, I'd go with Jimmy Anderson, considering that he's coming to the end of his career as well. If he's fit, he's still your number one.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, gentlemen, let's pause for business calls when we come back. Of course, we're going to continue our discussion. And just around 7:30, we hope to have the batting coach of the West Indies side, of course, Floyd Reefer, coming to talk to us. He's in the meeting, but he's promised to join us. Mason and Guest, this is Mason and Guest. I'm Andrew Mason, and we've got Dr. Andrew Ford. And we are very much on Zoom, and Philo Wallace looking as young as ever, without any hair. He's got his glasses on. Up there in England, we've got Russell Arnold, who spent the last, 12 years living in Sydney. And, of course, we've also got John Buran, the noted journalist. And we also have Kyle Mears, who's wearing a big, big beard, the man from Blackrock Country here in Barbados. Dr. Ford, any questions for Kyle?
Yes, Kyle, good night, first of all. Can you tell us about the bounce and any movements, and also comment on the pace of Gabriel and, mm-hmm. and the other quicks today?
Yeah, I could. I was actually on their side. I thought they bowled very well. As I said, it was an even pitch. I thought he bowled some really good deliveries to get the batsman out. There were no false strokes. Only one I can remember, John Campbell falling to a short ball, which was well planned by him also. But the others were caught behind and stuff off a good length, moving away. So I thought he bowled well. And Azhari Joseph came in his last spell. I thought he bowled really quick, and he was accurate, and it paid for him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How did the wicket-keeping go? And I know that we have not a first-choice keeper, but we had another keeper playing today. How did they look behind the stump?
I think Joshua did a wonderful job.
Catches too.
I heard he took four catches.
He took some wonderful catches. Had a few slip-ups with the ball moving around down the leg side. I mean, this is my first thing to England. I don't say it often, but bowling here, I can tell you that sometimes when the ball passes behind, it moves a lot. So his first time also, I thought he did an excellent job. Took some really good catches, especially off the pacers and one off the spin that was really great.
Mm-hmm. What about any real psychological work being done on you guys as a group while you're up there?
Yes, we have a psychologist. I don't know how many persons went to him as yet. Heard a few players said that they were going to speak to him and what's not. He said he's always available. I myself haven't reached the stage of going to him as yet, but there's someone here in place for that.
Mm-hmm. And I note that you bowled as well today. Enjoyed bowling. Let's look at your figures. 8 overs, 3 maidens done for 16.
Yeah, it was decent. I mean, back bowling now, fully. No, I was injured last season during the first class competition. It felt okay. I'm trying to find back a rhythm. Didn't get any wickets today, but I kept it tight. It was a decent spell.
Mm-hmm. Just before we go back to Philo, Jason Holder was on the field today, was he? I noticed he didn't bowl. Is he okay?
Yeah, he was the skipper of our side today.
Mm, but he didn't bowl. Is he injured or you don't know?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think he's injured. I just think it's about giving this opportunity.
Oh, I see. Okay, fair enough. So Russell, you got the information. Jason Holder is not injured, just giving opportunities to people like Kyle Mears.
No, that's good. That's good. They need to check things out, see how they can go. And obviously, there must be a little bit of protecting the captain as well, because he will give the West Indies team that balance. Remember, he's the batsman and a bowler. So very, very important player, and looking after him is the way to go. And there are lots of boxes to be ticked, especially in this scenario, playing against your own squad. Give everyone a run, get the rust out, and quietly get into your groove.
Now, let's come back to you, Johnny. What's the situation with Root? I know he's got his wife has got a baby on the way. Is he going to be available?
Well, it's a good question, Andrew. I think it really depends on when it lands, so to speak, to be honest. I mean, you know, you slightly have to let nature take its course.
Now, if Root is not available, I'm going to start with you, Philo. Would you pick Ben Stokes as your captain?
But he's the vice captain, Andrew. He's your captain. The side of the captain is not there. But before I get there,
There's so many concerns.
You need effervescence sometimes.
All right.
I just want to say congrats to Kyle Mears for making that West Indies squad.
Right.
I'm not going to say 14 and 11. I'm just going to call it a big squad. Mm. And one question I want to ask him before you come back to me: How did the guys go about shining that ball today?
Right.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, we've been practicing for a few weeks now, and the coaches were challenging us to find a way to get the ball shined. I thought that the material that we played in today really helped, and they tried to let us use sweat. A couple days we played in cold conditions. There was no sweat. Mm-hmm. But today it was hot and sunny, so guys really use the perspiration on the ball.
Okay.
A little bit strange.
Because it's interesting. Because you cannot use saliva anymore.
No, you can't use saliva anymore.
It's very tricky because you're so accustomed
to
going back to the mirror and doing it. I think some guys still slip puts at some stage, but
no matter.
You did good. The psychologists have to come in, because again, we're looking. Kyle said that the uniform they wore today shined the ball. Now that is not white clothes.
Yeah, but Phil,
yes, please.
Using this sweat, it's hard to shine the ball, isn't it?
Unless you have suntan. You need something extra. They need to find something extra to shine the ball.
Yeah, we used to put the sweat on to make that side heavy, not to get the shine on.
Yeah,
so it's
you can't get shiny sweat.
It's looking for the viewers.
Yeah, so conditions, it's basically going to be conditions. They're going to be bowling how conditions suit. If the sun is hot, there's going to be less swing. If it's overcast, there will be swing. But then how do you preserve one side of that cricket ball? How do you get reverse swing?
Interesting.
Because you need a shiny side and a rough side. So how do you keep one side of that cricket ball shiny before using saliva?
Russell?
I think some guys are going to use chewing gum.
Russell?
Oh.
Yeah, now that's a real problem for the players. Because if you don't maintain that ball, you're not going to get anything as the day goes on. So it's the first few overs and then you're gone. Because when we were playing, it was all about the saliva and... the sweat was used for different purposes to make the ball heavy. And Chamin Davas, he'd be filthy with Murali because Murali would just go and, you know, put soil or just do that to the ball. And there goes the shiny side. And he was told to keep off because the sweat gets on the ball and the shine. You can't maintain the shine, rather. Mm-hmm. So that was a struggle we did have. So I'm a little... concerned how the players are going to get the most out of that ball.
Now, gentlemen, if we just take the discussion, I'm going to wrap soon because I know you gentlemen, of course, Philo's maybe doing some studies after this. And of course, Johnny looks a bit tired now. Johnny, keep your eyes open. We can see you're sleeping there on me. Come on, Johnny. And of course, Kyle wants to go to bed. Talking about concerns, so let's start with you, Johnny. What's going on in Pakistan? A lot of these cricketers are coming down with the coronavirus and they're supposed to come and visit you. You must be concerned about that.
Yeah, I must admit, when the news broke today, it was of enormous concern. Ten people, or 10 of the squad, have tested positive for COVID-19. But Wasim Khan had a sort of very strong statement saying, the test squad is largely unaffected. I think there's just one player in that, the actual test squad that's coming over here that is affected. And actually, all players, really interestingly, were asymptomatic. So although they tested positive, nobody actually was carrying any symptoms whatsoever, which is a really interesting factor. And I mean, there's so many permutations, of course, of COVID-19. It's difficult to sort of really anticipate how it manifests itself. But, you know, it's an important tour for Pakistan coming here. They'll be very keen, of course, for England to return the favour to go back there, which could be an historic occasion for Pakistan. England haven't toured for, well, not since 2006, from memory. So, you know, I think Pakistan will travel here. The test will take place. But, of course, you know, there could well be some more COVID-19 tests that could be positive, but Wasim Khan is very adamant that they're coming here.
Mm-hmm. Philo?
Yeah, it's quite shocking, actually, to hear so many Pakistan cricketers have COVID-19 tested positive. But as the CEO said, he said there's only one player affected in the test squad. And England is a big tour for any test-playing nation, Andrew. Pakistan, Sri Lanka, West Indies, Australia, India. And they will want to come here. And it's also good to come here because something needs to happen to show the world that sports can go on or can restart amidst this COVID-19. So I think that West Indies have started the ball rolling, and Pakistan just wants to continue and try to fulfill their duties as an international cricket nation, because the guys want to play cricket.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they work. That's their job. Their job is to play cricket. So they'll go to the length and breadth to make sure that they come and play cricket. It's just unfortunate, but hopefully, those guys who are tested positive will have the 2 weeks quarantine.
Yeah, cricket needs to go on, so everybody is aware of that. It's also jobs. It's also the earnings. The cricket boards will get back. Now, without that, everything's going to just fall apart. So if you can, you try and do what you can to go out there and do the best. And try and get things going. So behind closed doors, whatever it is, no one can whinge. Yes, the atmosphere might not be there, but play cricket. Play cricket, and everyone's a lot happier. Now, what happened in Pakistan was they had actually initially managed everything pretty well. And it came up about 2-3 weeks ago, which is their big celebration. And a lot of my friends from back there said that's when everything went crazy. Everyone totally forgot about COVID and just went about hugging each other and partying. And this is the result of that, unfortunately.
But Russell, we're going to stay with you. But things will never be the same again for cricket. I mean, this COVID-19 has really changed. I mean, it's just changed the world.
It certainly has, and we're still dealing with a lot of unknowns. So as time goes on, we'll know how much we can go back to normalcy or how we were before. So we'll certainly have to adjust our behaviors, accept what's in store, and go on. Now, if I tell you something about Australia, we spoke about
sure.
being a bit safe. But World T20, a few months away, the problem of managing 16 teams and the logistics, that's the issue. But a bilateral series, it's a cakewalk how things are here. And they will allow crowds in too. It's so well managed. More often than not, things will be normal. But playing, as we spoke about, the saliva going on the ball. Now we're going to have to come up with new techniques, how to handle with all that. So a few differences which will certainly come in, but we are hoping that we can get back to normal as much as possible.
Mm. Johnny, serious stuff going on in the world. COVID-19 really changing the face of cricket and the world.
Yeah, I think the key thing to remember is that we're in the pre-vaccine state, if you like, on this virus. Now, if we are to get a vaccine in the space of the next 12 to 18 months, that changes the entire landscape. And the landscape could almost return to something close to normality. But until that point, then social distancing and all the measures that we see will be really important. You only have to look at Novak Djokovic and that tournament that he held over the weekend, and the fact that 10 people already have come down with symptoms of COVID-19 when social distancing measures weren't enforced or adhered to. You cannot take this thing lightly. And this will be the enduring narrative until we get to a state when we have a vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Doc?
Well, that's a very good point with Djokovic and people in the Major League Baseball, NFL, soccer, you know, their players who are coming down with COVID-19. So the question really is, outside of these international tournaments in the UK in biosecure conditions, do you think we'll really have any other international cricket this year? Because the T20 seems to be impossible due to the number of teams and the logistics, and then there's still a lot of questions about the top T20 tournament, the IPL. Mm-hmm. So do you think that this, having test cricket as in the forefront as the only active cricket there is, do you think this will help to push this format? And what do you think are the prospects of any other cricket of significance outside the UK this year?
Andrew, if I may say something,
sure.
Well, you really have to assess how things are in different parts of the world, the situation, how it's managed, how it's being contracted. Everything is certainly different. Now, in Australia, India certainly will tour end of the year. Mm-hmm. Their summer, India will come in. They're playing three test matches, and the word how things are right now is that crowds will be allowed. Rugby, AFL, other sports are on, and crowds are allowed. Yesterday, there was an announcement that 25% of the crowd will be allowed into stadiums. So that's another step forward. So if this continues, come the Australian summer, there'll be more people allowed in. But of course, we have to be aware of how we behave. Now, even in Sri Lanka, it's kind of managed, and I believe they will look to have cricket going with managed crowds. It's easier to manage in Sri Lanka than in India because of the number of people or the density and the number of people that you find around. So it's something that will vary from place to place. But if you're asking, will we see international cricket? Yes, I'm pretty sure you'll see India, Australia for sure at this stage.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we've been talking a lot about COVID-19 and the last 2 months, but Black Lives Matter has come into the focus and you know, is rivaling COVID-19 for all the news cycles. What do you think, is this a good time for the ICC and competing teams to make a really big statement regarding equality and racism and, mm-hmm. and other issues that we see all over the world?
Mm-hmm. Phillips, let's start with you on that one.
But it's racism has always been around, Andrew, and I think that sometimes we have to be careful how we go about rehashing things. It's not nice what has been happening in terms of you know, people losing their lives, particularly Black people losing their lives. But also we have to look at the bigger pictures that we need to take our world forward in a positive way. We still have to look at the young people who we have to manage as adults. And when you look at it, I think that the statement has been made that you need to respect people's lives and just have a love. What I find is missing in the world, Andrew, is love. And that is why we're having all the problems. People don't love or respect one another. Everybody wants to be or stand up on top of somebody's head and stuff like that and be above you. And I think that's where the breakdown is. And Doc, I think that sports have to be the breaker here. We saw in 1983, a West Indies team went to South Africa, and we were up in arms and saying they should not have gone. But look down the road, if South Africa is admitted national cricket. And I believe that sports across the world have to break this racism talk down. There's no other way to do it. The politicians cannot do it. Sports people have to do it because that's where people interact. I know there's rivalry on the field, but off the field, they have to show love and respect for each other. If not, this thing is going to continue. And it's, Andrew, it's scary because as a Black man, being in England, they paint everybody with the same brush.
So
you've got to be careful.
Mm.
Yeah, I was in Wimbledon, and people are looking at you funny, you know, like, they're scared because, you know, they're scared. What has been happening? I know Johnny's there, but you've got to be careful. So I think that we need to just need to try and bring some sense to this whole thing. Mm. And I think that sports is going to break that barrier.
Philo, just before we bring in Arnold, I know you got your hand up. I got to ask you a question. Philo, have you ever experienced racism?
Yeah, I have, Andrew. Really? I laugh it off. Yeah, man, I laughed it. Andrew, I toured Australia in 1992 with the West Indies team in the World Series. Mm-hmm. And we were playing at the Alan Border Stadium against Australia. And Desmond Hughes and I opened batting. And an Australian fast bowler told me to go back on the banana boat.
Is that
and
true?
And I walked down to Desmond. And I said, well, this man telling me about go back on a banana boat, Desmond. Well, I came in on a Qantas airline, you know. What banana boat this man dealing with? So Desmond is telling me, oh, he's telling me I'm a monkey. I said, I can't be no monkey. I don't have a tail. And I'm a nice-looking dark man.
Mm.
So yes, I experienced it, but you shut it off. You don't worry about it. I played league cricket, and men would tell you stuff in the Durham Senior League back in the 1990s. In 1995, 96, they would tell you harsh things. But when you do, you make your back talk. You score runs and they shut them up. Mm. I know it's difficult, but you have to find a way. You have to find a way to stop it. Because violence on top of violence is just going to bring more violence and destruction. Mm. And you don't want it, Andrew.
Mm.
So you need to find a medium to try to eradicate this thing. Mm. Some way, somehow.
Mm. Russell?
Yeah, I mean, racism is everywhere. It also comes down to how you handle it. Experienced it for sure. But if you are in a position, you should make sure that you do not react. It's his problem, not your problem. You've got to look after yourself first. But beats me most is experiencing racism from your own. You come... to the subcontinent, for example, a white man's treated differently to the rest of the people. So even from there, there is a bit of that. And that really beats you. A white man comes in, he doesn't have to stand in a queue. He can walk straight through.
Ooh.
So type of things. Other stuff also you do experience. It's true, Philo. You And that's what really bugs me. More than anything else.
No, Russell, I asked the question to Philo. You played for Sri Lanka. Have you ever experienced racism playing or in your life?
Oh, I certainly have in different ways. But it's something I don't want to get into, Andrew, if you don't mind.
Fair enough.
If we talk about it, I feel, you know, it doesn't worry me. It's not my problem. Well, for example, I'll tell you just one little story. When I first moved to Sydney, I went out to rent an apartment,
mm-hmm.
and they shrugged me off. They didn't even want me. Oh, yeah. Then there was a piece of paper,
mm-hmm.
Which said, oh, you just write your name down there and you go. So references, there were. I put down all the cricketers' names, and by the time I walked out, the guy runs behind me saying, look, we got a person who can show you around.
Mm.
So the color or where you come from, all that people pass judgment and then things change for a different reason. So as Philo mentioned, sport has a big part to play in showing the world how to go forward because it's a common language. And players really do have a big responsibility in how they behave out there because that is the outlook that younger kids and everyone do pick up on. It's not about words. We see a lot of sportsmen coming out and giving statements. Anti-racism, against violence, blah, blah. But on the field, the aggression and the sledging, when people see that, you can't pass it off as being competitive. It is a different message. That does go out. I watched a rugby game. I'm rattling on, but just a little bit more. There was a rugby game here, a state of origin game, where the captain punched the player on the opposing player. And they said, oh, in the heat of the moment, that's all fine. They're being competitive. And the next day, there was a school gala day. 9-10-year-olds playing. Mm. And a kid punched the other kid. And the principal said, now what am I... Yesterday, they said... that the state of origin cap, it was okay for him to punch, that it's being competitive. Now, what am I to tell this kid? Was that okay? So, sports has also got to clean up its act and give out the right impression. It's not okay
to be aggressive and to show showcase aggression and call it competitiveness.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go to you, Kyle. I know it's way past your bedtime. What do you have to say to the people back in Barbados and, of course, by extension, the Caribbean? You look good in terms of what we're seeing there on Zoom. You've got your big beard on. You're looking forward, of course, to winning this series. Tell the people of the Caribbean that there's hope with this West Indies side.
There's definitely hope. I can tell people back home already know this. We just came from playing England at home. I did well. Right. And we here expect to do the same here. The guys are in good form. We've been through some tough training to get our bodies and stuff back into that cricket mode after that COVID lockdown. And everyone's looking good. As I said today, the batsmen, they look good. The bowlers, they look even better. And we've been putting in the work. So I think it's going to be a very good series.
And your expectations for tomorrow, 275 all out? Looking forward to a battle tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to having a knock in England. My first thing will be playing an actual game. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm, indeed. All right. Well, I want to thank you very much indeed, Kyle, for coming. So go and get some rest and make sure that you keep that beard growing nicely. It's really good to see you. Russell, final words, and of course, Philo, and of course, Johnny Moran. Let's start with Russell.
Yeah, looking forward to the series. It should be good. All eyes here. I have to break rest, but I'll be watching you guys go at it. And hopefully we can have a chat again. Anyway, wherever you are, right. You know, you'll be good.
Yes. Yeah. And you'll be good as well. You'll be good as well.
Right. It will be. Very good chatting to you. And stay safe. Stay safe.
Okay. All right. Philo, talk to me.
But Andrew, obviously, this series is a big series for West Indies and for England and for world cricket. And I hope that the people in the Caribbean, as I said before, really rally behind the West Indies team and give them a whole lot of support. I think that in a good space, there's a lot of positives coming out of that camp from the coaches and from everybody in the camp. They're quite happy. Everybody seems to be settling. And Kyle is just putting more muscle on it.
Right.
The guys look good. The batsmen look good, but the bowlers look better.
Ooh.
So that is what you want to hear. The challenge is on, Andrew.
The challenge is on.
I hope that West Indies will rise to the challenge.
Johnny, final words with you.
Yeah, look, it's a hugely important tour. I think England as a nation are very grateful for the West Indies for running the gauntlet and coming here in such a difficult time. And look, I think on the basis, if you look at the last six test matches between the two sides, it's been very, very tight indeed. And I just see this West Indies side with the strength that they have with the bowling attack and the fact they've got some men in form with the bat, I just think it'll be a very, very exciting series indeed.
All right. Well, thanks to you, gentlemen. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, and we hope to join you again sometime. Enjoy the rest of your morning, of course, Russell. Philo, get some sleep. You need it.
And I need
it. Of course, in fact, I look at the Zoom. I don't even see. Oh, yes. I see my good friend there, Johnny. Johnny, you need some sleep. And of course, our very good friend is just about to leave us as well. We're talking about Kyle Mears. Gentlemen, enjoy it. All right. Let's pause for business calls. When we come back, we're going to go to Antigua and talk to Dominic Warren. People want to know if there's going to be coverage. And of course, Kenny Flipper Benjamin is on the line as well. Mason and Guest is brought to an association with our very good friends at Barbados Lottery, promoting youth sport and culture.
Here's your chance to cash in on big winnings for 2020 with the newest $10 scratch ticket from the Barbados Lottery. Purchase a cash-in ticket today for your chance to win up to $100,000 and to double or even triple your winnings on each ticket. So play and win big with cash-in from the Barbados Lottery.
All right, this is Mason and Guest. I'm Andrew Mason, along with co-host Dr. Andrew Ford. We've got Risa Abbasali on the line, the student of West Indies cricket. I can see him. Hello, Risa, nice to see you. And of course, we also have on the line as well Dominic Warren, the commercial director there at Cricket West Indies. And of course, Kenny Flipper Benjamin has also joined us as well. Let's start with you, Dominic. First of all, how are you doing? How are you coping with COVID-19?
doing okay, thank you. Glad to see everyone smiling here as well. So all okay. Antigua's good. We're just dealing with this Saharan dust at the moment, so that's a little problem to play on the lungs that COVID hasn't thus far hit us with. So hopefully that'll pass quickly too.
And Kenny Benjamin, where are you, Kenny? Is he still with us, Kenny? I thought we just saw Kenny there. We don't see Kenny. How are you? He's gone. Okay, he dropped out. We're going to try and get him. And of course, you know, today marks 41 years West Indies, of course, winning back in 1979 the World Cup. But of course, on the weekend, on Sunday, June the 21st, it was 1975, 45 years ago when the West Indies won the first World Cup. A little bit later on, we'll be talking to Reza Avazali. We also hope to join Clive Hubert Lloyd to go through that session. Reza, how are you, my friend? You got to turn that mic on so that we can hear you. I think.
Okay, can
yes.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we're hearing you.
Yes.
How was Trinidad and Tobago?
Oh yes, man. I mean, you know, we open all businesses right now. I mean, we're looking good. The flights are not yet coming in, but commerce is back on stream, Andrew.
Indeed. And Kenny, I think we got Kenny Benjamin, the flipper, back on the line, Kenny. Yeah, Kenny, you got to turn that mic on. Kenny? All right. Kenny, turn your mic on. All right. Until Kenny, he's getting old now, you know, Kenny, so it's taking some time. But let's talk to you now, Dominic. A lot of people have been asking, a lot of interest in this series, England versus the West Indies. Will it be on television? Will it be on radio? Talk to us.
It will most definitely be on television. So, ESPN Caribbean had the rights for the series as part of a deal they've done with the English Cricket Board over a few years. I think they also had the, in fact, I know they also had the rights to the ICC World Cup broadcast as well. So this is something that ESPN Caribbean have done. So for those listeners who have ESPN Caribbean as part of their cable packages, it will be live and shown in full on ESPN Caribbean on cable. With regards to highlights as well, I think they will have a highlights package as well, but we're also having a conversation with them to hopefully see that we can get some of those highlights onto the West Indies website and social channels as well so that they can be shared. From a radio perspective, as you've heard me just say on the TV, that those rights also sit with the English Cricket Board. So much as we'd love to see what we can do here with Cricket West Indies, that's something that still sits with the English Cricket Board. So I know there have been inquiries. They are having some conversations, I know, internally to see what might be possible. And with luck, the radio will hopefully be on in the Caribbean as well. But unfortunately, I can't promise anything because that's not in my gift at the moment, unfortunately.
Well, what kind of numbers you're playing with here, Dominic, in terms of that television audience, possibly?
Well, in terms of the television audience, I mean, they say that ESPN Caribbean is apparently in over 1.3 million households in the Caribbean, or has a reach of it. So those, I certainly know that the cable networks that have ESPN Caribbean, I mean, that's a fairly sizable reach across the Caribbean. Unfortunately, for those who only have terrestrial TV, it is the nature of the sports world at the moment that tends to be cable packages wherever you go in the world, in terms of USA, Europe, Australia, Africa, Middle East, that tend to get the prime sports activities. But at the same time, you get fantastic production going with it. So, ESPN Caribbean will have that for all three of the test matches starting on the 8th of July. We'll be providing on all of the West Indies social and web channels as well, information on that as and when we got broadcast details.
Yeah, this is going to be the first time that Test Match Highlight will be on BBC in 20 years. I mean, how significant is that for the sponsors of our cricket and our new kit and getting more exposure for the team?
Yeah, it's a very good point, actually. I think it's been a question for some time in the United Kingdom that what is the impact of not having terrestrial TV, particularly on the BBC, covering international cricket. So for it to go back, obviously they've done very well for those of you that might have listened to Test Match Special around the world or on BBC World Service over a long period of time. BBC is renowned for it. So it will be significant. It gives you a huge reach into, you know, probably in the region of 28 to 29 million people in the UK. So for brands such as Sandals, who obviously sponsor the West Indies team in Cricket West Indies, it gives them significant exposure. So you probably have close to a million people watching it live at any point in the UK, in terms of, by the nature of most of the time, Test cricket during weekdays. At the weekends, that spikes quite a lot, of course. But the BBC piece is significant. And again, you've got a business that a public service that has a fantastic legacy, so with some brilliant commentators as well. So I think it'll be interesting. And again, that's one of the conversations that we're having, to see if possibly the BBC can extend that into the Caribbean, which I know that they used to do, you know, many years ago. So as I said, it's we're nudging and prodding to see what can be possible, and hopefully something will be beyond the current agreements.
Mm-hmm. COVID aside, what are the prospects in the future for maybe expanding our TV reach for home series to improve our earning potential going forward?
Yeah, well, you got two angles, really. Any time the West Indies play away, it's whomever we're playing will have the rights, and it's really therefore dependent on the public TV stations or the cable stations to make proposals for that. For the international home series here, here in the Caribbean, we are in discussions with most of the providers as to featuring West Indies live on TV, and that would include highlights and highlights clips. And we're also in discussions. We've also put out a request for a proposal document on international and regional radio as well, which we're discussing in the next few, in the next 24 hours, in terms of the responses we received. So TV first and foremost, that is obviously the big one. We want to get the right balance between capturing the revenue that can be reinvested into cricket, because TV revenue is a significant part of the revenues that we receive. And then secondly, obviously we want that balance to make sure enough people get to see it as well, because it's great generating the revenue, but if we can't make sure that people all across the region can access it, it's a little bit self-defeating. So we've got to get that balance right. A lot of it now depends on when we will have the first international home series back in the Caribbean after COVID-19. A lot of that is really dependent on the international schedule now and what happens with governments. Every day, you know, there are some things that firm up and there are other things that become a little bit more variable, and that's just the nature of the world situation. So we were due to have New Zealand here for three Colonial Medical Insurance ODIs, and then another three T20 internationals, and then South Africa were due in August as well for two test matches and five T20 internationals, obviously building up to the planned World Cup, the ICC T20I World Cup in October, November in Australia. So there's a lot going on. The ICC is still looking at all the scenarios regarding the World Cup, and everything will most likely fall out of what happens in the decision that they make there, whether they confirm it or whether they decide to postpone it, and potentially that would move into 2021. And that therefore has quite a lot of ramifications. But at the same time, there's a lot of cricket to fit in terms of the ICC Future Tours program. So we would have to reschedule those series if they can't happen between New Zealand and South Africa. And then moving into next year, we've got three home series already planned for Sri Lanka, Pakistan and Australia, who haven't been here for some time. So there's a lot of cricket to fit in, and that's not considering the away series as well. So lots going on, lots of variables, but we hope to get some movement over the course of the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Just before you come in, I know you got a question. Just want to confirm, you're saying next year, Dominic, that we're going to have Pakistan, possibly Sri Lanka and Australia?
Yeah, the plan is to have Sri Lanka earlier in the year, and then Pakistan, and then Pakistan and Australia. Obviously, things may shift around because of the COVID situation.
What time of the year possibly?
So they would be Pakistan and Australia would be end of June, July, and August.
Okay, I see.
And that would involve test matches for Pakistan, as well as white ball cricket, whereas Australia is white ball cricket only.
Mm. Doc?
Okay, so we have to negotiate with the providers in each of those countries, as well as the people we'd usually negotiate with when the home series are on there. So a lot of work. Negotiations to be done.
Yeah, well, ultimately, all of these negotiations are generally done for over a 4 or 5 year period for a calendar of cricket. Both whether that be West Indies playing whoever that nation is, but also whenever we're playing other nations as well. So, for example, if we were to do a deal in the UK, that deal would cover all of West Indies cricket played in the West Indies. So we've essentially got two international agreements concluded now. We're not able to announce them yet because there's some sensitivities around them, but that's good news. And obviously the big ones in terms of world cricket are, in terms of the revenue, are Australia, India, and the UK. And so we got some very good proposals. For us, really, it's just the next step of no one's really able to commit until they know what the schedule is and how much cricket is within that schedule. So within those negotiations, you build some different levers in, and that's something that we'll be working on. So we're not going from a standing start. We've had a lot of discussions for the last, what must be over a year now. And so some have been concluded, and the big ones, we've got to really just get to the final proposals, dot the I's and cross the T's, and hopefully in the next couple of months, if not sooner, as we get the national schedule concluded or more of it firmed up, I should say, then we're in the right position to be able to confirm what those are. And actually for West Indies cricket, that's critical because of the revenues, and that therefore means we can start to invest into cricket development in terms of all age groups and at the elite level as well.
Great. Okay, back to you, Andrew.
Right, okay. The president of the Trinidad and Tobago Cricket Association, Mr. Basrat, recently said that there's a possibility that the regional championships may be truncated, where you may very well just have one round of matches. So I don't know if you can confirm this. Normally you have, home and away situation. Is there the possibility that later on for the regional tournament we may not have as much cricket as we normally have, Dominique?
Realistically, all options are open at the moment. The board, we presented different scenarios to the board, and really it depends on what happens next in terms of both the international and the regional schedule and what can be done with governments. You'll have seen elements in the press as well from the CPL. There's lots going on with the CPL in terms of what they're looking to do. So once the CPL is firmed up as to what they can or cannot do from in terms of government restrictions and what that allows them to do in terms of either behind closed doors or in front of fans, much more will become possible. You know, with the Super 50, for example, everyone will know that we've been used to having the USA and Canada here. That will be, you know, if they cannot travel, for example, or they have restrictions, then we might have to look at a different format. But obviously, we've had great success as well with some of the youngsters and the players who have been around the fringes of franchises in the last 2 years, with the CCC Marooners winning in 2018, and then the West Indies Emerging Players winning last year, which was a fantastic result. So if you speak to our director of cricket, Jimmy Adams, he will tell you just how important it is for our players to have good quality time in the middle of the pitch. I'm sure Kenny might talk about that. You've got on as well next, but that importance for players at all levels to get first class experience is critical. And so, you know, whilst all scenarios on the table, it's certainly not a wish that we want to reduce cricket. It might have to be an option, but it will be restrictions and the COVID-19 situation which determine that. But we're hopeful that we can have pretty much to a normal schedule. And as normal, we're still looking at the Super 50 for the end of the year, which is generally in November, and then the West Indies Championship in terms of the four-day Red Bull starting after that and then into the new year itself. So, I mean, there's so much that can happen, as you see in the news every day. We're waiting to see, and if we had some certainty, it would be great for everybody. But at the moment, lots of scenarios and, you know, lots of planning accordingly.
Mm-hmm. All right, Dominic, thanks very much for coming through and talking to us. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so there you have it. Dominic Warren, the commercial director of Cricket West Indies on the line. Really good to have him. Do we have Kenny Benjamin now? Hello, Kenny? Kenny Benjamin. Well, we don't seem to have... Hello, Kenny? All right, we're going to try to see if we can make that kind of a contact with him. But Reza is very much with us on the line. We are also hoping to go to England and talk to the batting coach who's on a Zoom call. He promised that he'd be available just around 7:30. So we hope to talk to him. And Conde Riley, Conde, you need to log in. Conde, we've been trying to reach you, please, because we want to know what's happening in relation to our local stuff. But of course, Reza Abizali is on the line from Trinidad and Tobago. The importance, Reza, of the West Indies winning the World Cup back in 1975 and 1979. Very important, isn't it?
Well, of course. Thank you again, Andrew. It was been the two iconic moments in, of course, World Cup history, the inaugural World Cup of 1975 that took place on June 21st. And then, of course, the repeat victory in 1979, June the 23rd, which is exactly 41 years ago, Andrew Mason. Mm. And we all remember, we hoped to have Sir Hubert Lloyd on the line on your show. Those great moments in West Indian cricket. Of course, the first World Cup, inaugural World Cup. All the first three World Cups took place in England at Lord's, the finals. And unfortunately, we couldn't do the three-peat in 1983. But surely, I would love to hear about Clive Lloyd's and his reflection on his 102 in that final of the World Cup of 1975, June the 21st. And then, of course, you know, the fantastic batting of Collis King and Viv Richards on that June 23rd, 1979. And, of course, the blistering bowling of Joel Garner in that final. And, of course, you know, unluckily we couldn't make it a three-peat. But two iconic moments, approximately 45 and 41 years ago, Andrew Mason.
Okay, stay with us, Reza. He's known as the... you're known as the student of cricket history. What's your title there? Tell me. This is what the ambassador, of course, we're talking about, Derek Murray up in Jamaica, told me. Well, what is your title?
Yeah. Well, look, Derek Murray on your show, he called me a walking encyclopedia in West Indian cricket history, but I prefer a very simple student of West Indian cricket because I'm still learning.
All right. A man who's learning... we can't get him on Zoom. But Kenny, is it that you don't want us to see your face? How are you, Kenny Flipper Benjamin, there in Antigua?
Good evening to you, Andrew. Good evening to all your listeners and your viewers. I believe I can have a very handsome face. I would love your guests to see me. I'm not at home, and I'm having some challenges with the internet.
All right. Now, talk to us, Kenny. We had, of course, today's cricket. We're going to talk to you about, you know, the series and all that. Braffitt's 11-275. Again, the batting, you know, Craig Braffitt got 84, but then Campbell failed. Brooks got a little start of 17. Chase got 37. Reefer, 6. You know, when he come down, well, Warren, because he's not much of a batsman. But at one stage, it was 199 for 3 to be all up for 275. He must be a bit concerned about the consistency or lack thereof in terms of the batting.
Yes, I believe the coach and most of the people who are following West Indies cricket, that would be their concern. I believe that is going to be one of our challenges, along with the mental part of the game. If we can score runs, runs on the board is, no matter how good the team is, there's always pressure. Your bowlers feel confident. They believe that they can do their thing. And so if we're not going to score runs, it is not going to be good for us. And so it is a concern. We haven't been very consistent in recent years. The last time we went to England, we played a couple of good innings, and it helped us to draw to level that series, I think, or we lost it 2-1. But I know we won down here. But the critical thing is that we have to approach the series and your sessions, days, and so on. That's how we got to take it. We have to make sure, and it is a good time, the inside, a lot of planning must be taking place, and we're just hoping that the batting, like you said, disappointed today, but we're just hoping that it gets better from here.
Doc, any questions for Kenny?
Kenny, what are your expectations overall for the series, performance-wise for the team?
Well, the thing about it, for me personally, I'm going to look at it to see if we have made strides overall. All West Indians, I'm sure, would like the West Indies to win. But I'll be looking more on just if we win the series. I'll be looking to see how we're performing, if guys are growing, if guys are starting to try and go and perform the way that the coach and the way that they themselves expect to go. That mental part of our cricket, where our batters don't expect that at that level, those bowlers are going to let us score at 4 and 5 runs and over. We have to grind it out. And I want to see the temperament of our batters. I want to see the planning of our bowlers, how we plan and over, how we plan a spell and so forth. Those things I'll be looking for, because that is where we will start to see if our players are really thinking about what they're doing, or if we're just playing cricket. And I believe that has been also the challenge that we have faced. So that's my expectation. I want to see how well we start to really and truly play the mental game.
Okay. Do you think the combination of fast bowlers that we have creates a good enough contrast to be penetrative in the English condition? With Holder and Gilbert and the others?
Yes. I like the setup, Roach, the captain, Joseph, and Holder. I believe it is a good setup. I know that the fast man from Trinidad wasn't 100% fit. I would have liked to see him there, in place of Raymond Reefer, but he wasn't fit, so I guess that's the way it is. But those four that I called, I look at the captain as a genuine all-rounder, a person who can bat as good as anyone in the team. And so I would like to see those four, along with Rocky Cornwall, carry the attack. I think that is our best chance to go 1-0 up, and I would just hope that the coaches are thinking along that line. But I believe that team bowling attack can give England problems in England.
Well, we know about Cornwall, exploit in the short version of the game, but do you think he can adapt to the five-day test match batting and really meet his full potential?
I tell you what, that is a very interesting couple of words you use there. Full potential. We always, as coaches and supporters and funders, look at the player and we can see that, look, this guy probably know a little bit more than what he's outputting. But the hardest thing for that individual is to go there and do it. And I think that is one of Cornwall's challenges. Yeah, when he goes into bat along the version of the game, he needs to steady and bat with the law of order. Mm. I believe that Didion can manage. We know he's not going to run a lot of quick singles, but he actually can steady and bat. You know, and as you say to him, that is what you need to do. You need to hold that end together and go there and let people work for your wicket, because you actually can bat. And if the coach can get him to understand that he's got a role to play down there and he can do it, it will only be better for the West Indies, because you have a couple of guys down there. Holder can bat, Roach can hold his own, and Azhar can hold his own. You actually can add some depth to the batting lineup if Cornwall can go there and play that type of that we believe and we know that we can do.
Mm-hmm. Just before you ask the other question, Doc, we got Sir Clive Lloyd on the line as well. Sir Clive, of course, we're going to come to you shortly. Just turn the mic on. Sir Clive, we want to make some contact because it is important that we talk to you before the end of the show, being the captain back in 1975 when we won the World Cup and back in 1979 as well. So we'll be touching base with him in just a minute. Doc, continue your conversation with Flipper.
Okay. Well, the batsman, we made there's only five batsmen, but there are a group of batsmen fighting for a place there, like Blackwood. We can argue Brooks and also Bonner. What I don't know if you've seen enough of them to really consider, you know, how they are doing at present and how they're suited to the test match game.
Well, three players. Three different styles. I believe that Brooks is more one of the classical types, works the ball really nicely, very good timer of the ball. I believe Bonner is someone who would call a struggling type of player. He would grab, he would try and bat long and try and, you know, really let it work for his wicket. I know he can be explosive, but his natural game is to really get in and stay in. On the other hand, we know Blackwood is a typical type of what we call the Caribbean free spirit. He likes to play shot. So I just believe it will be up to the coach when they look at the rest of the team. It's out of these three guys, which one we believe fits best or which one suits best in terms of what we're looking for, what we're trying to achieve in the first step.
Mm-hmm. Flipper, final question to you. Look into that crystal ball there in you're not a St. John's man. I think you're a country man. Do you think West Indies will win this series, Flipper Benjamin? Tell me, Flipper.
I believe we can win. I believe we can win. I think that it is going to be a tough mental battle. The fact that, you know, everybody haven't been playing any cricket, and even though you practice, it is different than when you're actually playing matches and so forth. I believe that West Indies can win, but we have to be strong mentally. We have to go there and believe. That is the word, and that is the action that we have to do. We have to go there and believe that we can beat England in all of the fancy talking and so on. Mm-hmm. When the bell tolls, we got to put them aside and go and play the cricket that these gentlemen can play, because when you look in the team, there's some talented fellas there. Whether or not they're going to play above the shoulders, that is going to be our downfall. But I actually believe that the West Indies can win this series.
All right. Kenny Benjamin, former West Indies fast bowler, thanks for coming on Mason and Guest. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thanks. And just let me say good evening to Sir Clive.
All right, Sir Clive, yes. I think we've got Sir Clive on the line now. Sir Clive, are you with us? Yes, Sir Clive, just turn the mic on and we'll be able to speak to you. We just saw your handsome face there just now, Sir Clive. Is the mic
on? Can you hear me now?
Yes. Oh, you're sounding very, very strongly. Sir Clive, how are you this evening?
I'm fine, thank you, Andrew. I'm all right. It's not too bad at all for an old boy.
I like that. All right. Now, on Sunday, June the 21st, you know, when you go back 1975, you know, when we were all celebrating 45 years ago, West Indies won the first World Cup. And today, quite appropriately, thanks to you, Philip Spooner, for providing that vital information. 1979, you know, when you look at the West Indies winning the second World Cup 41 years ago, you were the captain on both occasions. This must mean something to you, Sir Clive.
Yes, it was a great moment for us in our cricket, actually, because we just won a series against India in a test series, which was quite close, and we had a lot of young players who did sort of, you know, aspire to great things later on. And then we went, you know, we came to England, and we weren't the favourites really of some.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a very strong side. I mean, we look at it, you had Lloyd, Boyce, Fredericks, Maurice Foster from Jamaica, Gibbs.
When we needed 66 off, hoping overs with the last period. That was a great moment for our cricket. I think that is when our cricket came alive. We, you know, people like Mr. Gregg was saying that, you know, when the chips are down, we tend to, you know, capitulate, but we didn't. It showed that we had that resilience, and Andy Roberts and Derek Murray sort of saw us home. And if we lost that game, we would have been yes. out of the competition. Mm. It was a very important win.
Mm-hmm. Risa, any questions for Sir Clive?
Yes, good day, Sir Clive. It's an honor to be with you in the same platform, Risa Basali. Yeah, man, I met you at the Charleville Presbyterian ground back in 2013. I interviewed you for the Nazi camp. It's great to have you.
Oh, yes.
Sir Clive, you know, you talk about that, you know, wonderful match at Edgbaston on June 11, 1975, when yeah. Derek Murray and Andy Roberts, you know, brought back that Houdini act. What about, what another one that really stands out was in June 14, 1975, Alvin Calitran taking on Dennis Lilly. Mm. Capture us for that. Take us.
Oh yes, that was another, you know, it was a terrific performance by Alvin. He sort of played a great innings actually, and got the better of Dennis Lilly. And not many people can say that. It was a terrific innings, and it just shows our side was just coming to fruition. And so we had those sort of moments of different people doing different things, you know, at different times sort of thing. So it was a real, real team effort.
What about, now let's go to your final, June 21st, 1975, the longest day in the summer of that World Cup, the inaugural World Cup. West Indies 291 for 8. And you according to the description, 102 in 82 minutes, you made the Australian bowlers dance to the musical tempo of your bat. Reflect on that innings and how you felt at the start.
Well, at the start, I sort of was knocking around quite well. I hooked, I think, Dennis Lilly for 6, and then mistimed one, and was dropped at mid wicket by Ross Edwards. Then from then on, you know, sometimes as you go along, you have this feeling like, this is my day.
Right.
You know, everything sort of, and I had the senior man there, my, you know, Rowan, and he played a terrific innings. Can you hear me, Phil? Hello?
Can you hear me? I can hear you, Sir Clive.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Ron played a terrific innings, and he helped me on my way to the century, and we got to sort of safety of such. It was, you know, terrific situations. Ron is one guy, as a guy that I've always sort of admired. You know, he was a beacon for all younger players in Guyana, and he did marvelous work for the West Indies, and he came back and played that innings that really saw us to that great total.
Risha, any other questions for Sir Clive? Risha, turn your mic on, Risha, and talk to us. Are you still hearing us?
Yes, I seem to have lost the sound. I don't know why.
But you're very much on.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me, Andrew?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes. Sir Clive, tell us about the. I think you mentioned about the role of Rohan Kanai, but
yes.
The fielding of Viv Richards in that final was astronomical, wasn't it?
Yes.
Oh yes. Well, that played him. He didn't make a great set of runs, but it was tremendous. I mean, those three runouts, you know, sort of. Won us the game of such. But the point is too that whenever we played the Australians, somehow they always have a run out or two somewhere.
Oh dear.
And if you look back over the years, you would have seen that they were not the best runners between the wicket and
you. Oh dear.
And Viv was a classic that day.
Doc?
Yeah. The client is still with us?
Yes, he's very much with us, Doc.
Dr. Rather suddenly. The client, what do you find the significance of those exploits from the 70s by your team? What effect does that have on modern day West Indian cricketers from your interactions with them and all the different spheres you've worked in cricket in the region? How important do you think it is to the modern day cricketer?
The point is that these days they play, they have the T20, so they play a few more shots. And don't forget too, when we played during that period, we didn't have the four men in the circle. You know, so you could defend, you could put most people in the boundary. As you notice that Mike Brayley did that once in Australia. I don't know if it was against us or it was against England. Australia. Okay. And so that was the situation. If you made a fairly good total, you can defend it. But we were still always attacking. That's why I presume Australia got fairly close. We didn't think about just putting men in the boundary. And you could have done that if you wanted to. But I thought those four men in the circle were quite good, because if you got a score, the team batting second can sort of attain that total too, because if they play good, you know, decent cricket. So that situation was at 291, we knew for sure that, you know, and it was getting a little hairy at times.
Yes, it was.
We did have a very young side and a very good fielding side. That guy had very good arms from the boundary. He had Keith Boyce, you know, Van Bun Holder. You had Bernard Julian. You had Alvin Kalicharan, and myself, Viv Richard. So we had a pretty good fielding side with good arms. They didn't have to loop the ball as such. They sort of, it was, they went like an exocet missile.
Well, you mentioned two people we don't talk about very often, Bernard Julian and Van Bun Holder. Can you compare their bowling styles to me? I know they bowl a different hand, but tell us about the ability of those two half-fast medium bowlers
I think Van Bun Holder is the most underrated bowler that, you know, in where the West Indies is concerned. At one stage when he started, he was very sharp, very quick. But as he played, you know, as he continued to play county cricket, he cut his pace down and he lined length, but he was still pacey. So he's a very difficult guy to sort of strike around the place. If you notice, in 1974 in India, he got a lot of the major wickets because good length and he's seaming it around. He was a tremendous cricketer. And I think he didn't get the accolades that he was supposed to. Bernard Julian, another great, the wonderful all-rounder, always 100%. And, you know, you call him, you can put him at, you know, bat up or back, or, you know, bowl at this particular time. And they never bothered about it. These guys just came and did their job. They were very good professionals.
Well, Sir Clive, we just got a couple of minutes left in the show, another, 3 minutes left in the show. We're going to certainly have a part two of this. Time goes so quickly. But just before you go, I just want to turn your attention, of course, to the current matters. Now, the West Indies are very much in England, preparing for the first test match, which starts on July the 8th. What are your thoughts? You think the guys can beat England?
Well, I think we have some young players. This is the time that our players now got to move from PM to AM. We're now in that morning period. We need now to ascend. Do you have a chance of, if some of them have played in England before, it's quite obvious that if they can get 300 odd runs in any innings of those test matches, we have the bowlers to put them in a position. We have about 9 batters there who can hold their own. Our bowlers can bat. If we can get 250 and 100 and something from our low order batsmen, we will be in the game. Our main thing is concentration. We have to concentrate for periods, for long periods. Because England have got 4 fast bowlers too. And they're pretty good. They're playing at home. And it's obvious that, when England came to the West Indies, nobody gave them a price, but they won the series. They have to take that as a lead situation. And I think that once they can concentrate for long periods, we need somebody like Craig Bradford to continue to bat like he batted a couple of years ago.
All right. Well, Sir Clive, we gotta leave it there. I really want to touch base with you again. Unfortunately, we weren't able to reach Van Bernholder, one or two problems we had, but we're going to try maybe for him next week. We'll maybe try and get him on Zoom because we had actually promoted that we were going to have Van Bernholder on the show, but we didn't make contact with him, but we will try it for next week. It has been another wonderful show. I want to thank Johnny Moran who came through, Philip Wallace who said he had a touch of racism. I'm sure that's going to make news tomorrow. And of course, Kenny Flipper Benjamin was very much in the line. We also want to thank Russell Arnold, the former player there from Sri Lanka, coming through and talking to us. Floyd Reefer is very much in the Zoom meeting. He was not able to be with us. And of course, we ended the show with the great Sir Clive Lloyd. And of course, Reza Abazali came on the line. I'm Andrew Mason. He's hoping for a brighter tomorrow. It's good night.